way to do this. Let me show you a better way. You don't have to be another face in the crowd.
And we are live. Welcome, folks, to episode 3839 of the Survival Podcast. It is a Monday, and it's a Monday we're launching just a little bit late today, and that's because Tom and I were pretty tied up today with enrollment in the ChatGPT course for solopreneurs. And last I checked, we had not yet sold out. There were still actually a few remaining seats. I think it's because we tried to do everything like really smooth this time, and maybe we over-smoothed it. So we had kind of this thing where, and it's still in place, if you go to the link, you get the countdown page, then it turned into basically an online queue, and we had people in line, and I think we had more people in line that were ever going to buy, and then some of the people that came to get in line couldn't get in line because the line was full. So anyway, if you still want a shot at it, I'm going to drop the link right now into the chat, and it is jackslaws.com/countdown, jackslaws.com/countdown. If you don't know what this is about, you probably don't want to make a last minute decision to sign up for it. It's something that we've been talking about for quite a few months, coming up round four of our ChatGPT course. And I'll just let people know that. And I don't think there'll be any left by the time the audio goes out. But if you're watching to the live right now, you may still have a chance. And I may mention that once or twice more during today's episode as people straggle on in, generally the very beginning of a live feed. Yeah, we have not very many people, and then the number just keeps going up and up and up. So what are we going to be talking about today? Because it's not about AI today at all. We have no interest in making this a show about AI or any specific technology or Bitcoin or anything like that. We're going to talk about 10 traits for the people who want to be winners in the next decade. And some of you guys are long-term listeners. You've been with me since, let's say, 2008 or 9 when I first started. So you may, if you've been around that long, remember in 2010 was the first time I said that we were going to have a decade of flux very soon. And the timeline I picked for that decade was 2020 to 2030. Three years ago, I said, really, I think we're going to slide that forward to 2025 to 2035. And I said, we'll see if I'm right. And I believe that I am. And I believe a lot of the things that happened between 2020 and 2025 were the last necessary things to move into this catalyst of change. And now we're a year and, you know, 4 months into it. I'm pretty firm on here it is. It's ongoing. It's happening. We're dealing with it. And it's only going to cascade and get more momentous from here forward. And we're going to go through a group of 10 ways the world is just pulling in different directions right now, in some unprecedented ways with the evolutions of technology. And then economic reality, geopolitical unrest. And then we're going to go through 10 traits. And I think when you read this episode today, the title, you might have thought it'd been like the traits are like people that buy Bitcoin or people that use AI or people that do whatever. No, these are like personality traits we're going to go through today. The mindset, the things that you need to have within you to adapt to what's coming, especially if you're going to be, you know, on the other side of this, if you're still going to be working, you can't ignore this. This is not a if it happens thing. This is an as it happens thing at this point. And whether or not it's going to impact you is also like off the table. You have no choice. I don't care what your job is. You can be the most blue collar of blue collar trades, which is something I really admire and I think is a real option for a lot of people today. And it's still going to affect you. There's going to be components of all of this technological evolution, all this geopolitical evolution, all of the tribalism, all of it's going to impact you. And so it's not a matter of if it's going to impact you. It's going to be how you're going to react to it, how you're going to respond to it. That's the only real question right now. Before we get into all this today, though, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor of the day number one today can help you with some of this, Start9. Start9 private servers will allow you to access your data from anywhere, any place in the world, fully encrypted over Tor, and anybody can do it. If you can install apps on a smartphone and use apps on a smartphone, then you can run a Start9 server. You can have your own private encrypted end-to-end messaging. You can forget about using the cloud, which is just somebody else's computer that you can be shut out of. There's a ton of things you can do. You can also run your own Bitcoin node. You can run your own Lightning node. You can run basically your own, be your own bank and run your own merchant account accepting Bitcoin. It is just an exceptional piece of equipment. And if you're an MSB member, you'll get a discount on it. And that discount will more than pay for your cost of membership for well over a year in the MSB. So they are a great supporting vendor of the MSB, not just a supporting sponsor of the show. Next up today is the caseplace.com. You know, with a company like Start9, since it is technical, I do have to somewhat explain, well, what exactly does a Start9 server do? And there's some real upgrades coming to it, by the way. We're going to have Jesse Markowitz talk about probably on this week or next week's Expert Council show. Actually, I think I'm having him on as a guest. I think that was the conclusion we came to, that it was too much to do as a guest segment or as a Expert Council segment. But this next sponsor today, I don't have to explain much at all as to the value proposition, thecaseplace.com. They do what they say and say what they do. It's a place where you can get hard side cases for your guns and gear. We're talking really top end stuff here. We're talking, you know, military grade. We're talking Pelican. We're talking Hardig. We're talking SKB and more. Inspected, field ready, and priced for the serious prepper. These are great cases. These are cases that you will save 50% to 80% out of the gate on just by doing business with the Case Place. They started out as an eBay seller before they were kind of standalone retail on their website. They have almost 2,000 reviews on eBay with like 4.9 stars overall. So they have a tremendous track record of delivering exactly what's promised. And if you're MSB, you get another 10% off everything at thecaseplace.com. I was just talking about this with Sean Mills last week when I was up in Tennessee for Nicole Sauce's event. And he's like, I told my wife, I think I need to get some gun cases. And she goes, you've already got some gun cases. He goes, yeah, but I need more at this price. And I think that really does convey the value that this company brings in a big way. Top level stuff. But instead of top level stuff that, you know, you're just you're paying full price for, you're paying half or less retail for the same gear. So check this out, guys. I really think you will enjoy doing business with the Case Place. And with that, I want to start talking to you about today's episode directly as we dig into what we're going to be doing today. Now, one thing I wanted to say about one of the peripherals I'm about to use, if you're watching the video anyway, is that it actually was built by an AI tool called Notebook LM. Like I said, today's show is not about AI in of itself. It's not like if you don't use AI properly, you're going to drown in the world of what's coming or anything like that. It's about personality traits. But AI is one of the mechanisms of flux. And I thought this would just be fun. If you've gotten my first book, Laws of Life, you know, I kind of went with this like leaked document feel to the book cover. And the second edition of that book is going to be out very, very soon, along with the second book in the series, Laws of Life Book 2, Now Design the System for Your Life. They're both coming out. I thought I would just, for today, for fun, to show you some of the stuff that's coming, it's available from AI platforms like Notebook LM, which is a product made by Google that works sort of kind of with Gemini, is lean into it with that. And so I actually have a bit of a presentation for you guys today. I won't have this up on the screen the entire time, but I kind of wanted to lean into the leaked document look here. And there's a reason for that. And it has to do with today's topic and the topic of my books as well. The things I'm telling you are not things that people that run the world don't know. They are things that they don't really care if you're prepared for or not, though. As I've said, lifestyle design is something that's going to happen in your life, whether you're proactively doing it or not. You're either going to live the life you designed for yourself, or you're going to live the life that was designed for you by others. So imagine if we had a deep, interested intelligence gathering report on the coming decade, what it might look like. Well, it might look something like what's on your screen right now. And what we're really looking at here is the velocity of change. As I said, way back in 2010, I made this prediction. I made this prediction that we had this decade coming, and this decade, my exact words, will be such that no living person will have ever witnessed this much change over 2 to 3 decades, let alone one. That's a pretty bold claim to make. And as I said, as we moved into the late teens, 2018, 2019, I started to doubt myself a little bit. Not the prediction, but the timeline. Was I too early? And I don't know if I was too early or if the entire kind of 3-year period of like COVID being a dominant part of our life slowed down the change, or if it actually accelerated. Maybe without that, I would have been off by another 5 years. It might have been 2030 to 2040. But I'm very convinced that 2025 to 2035 is now locked in. The waiting is over. We're in totally uncharted territory. There's economic and geopolitical macros that are moving in 10 completely opposing directions all at the same time. And then we have to contend with those. Again, especially if you plan, you know, if you're still going to be working 5, 10, 15 years from now, if you're not to the point of you're going to be ready to retire, you're going to have to deal with this anyway, but you're really going to have to deal with this in the workplace. And those of you that are not going to make the retirement cutoff, but you're closer than further, right? So you're going to be like at the end of 10 years, you're going to have like 10 years to go. You're going to be right in the freaking crosshairs of this if you do not adapt to it. And as we you know, kind of go on playing with this a little bit from a standpoint of the deck that I'm running today for you, I do want you to know this. The AI did not make any of these terms or concepts up. This was all show notes I did. And then I took those show notes and I dropped it in and I said, make me a deck. I gave it instructions to make it have the look and feel of like a leaked document type thing that would be given as a live presentation. And that's pretty much it. That's all the instruction it got for me. And so all it did was create visual interpretation of my work. And this is something I actually want to use a little bit to explain to you how fast technology is moving. There's a lot of people that are still, you know, AI slop or whatever. Every time they see anything associated with AI, but they're not seeing clearly. So if I had a person that worked for me and I said to that person, here's my show notes where they make me a PowerPoint deck, and they made me a PowerPoint deck, there's not one person out there with a brain anyway that would say he cheated or he phoned it in or whatever. They'd say, well, he created the concept. He gave the graphics portion of things and the presentation format of things off to a team member. It's all I've done with AI. This is still all my work. And the fact that I could drop that in and get something like those of you that are on the video are looking at right now in literally minutes. And that was the processing time for the Google Notebook program to do its work. But the time it took for me to go from my show notes are ready, I could present from them as they are, to I've done the part I need to get this thing to spit out for me, 30 seconds. Literally 30 seconds to type a 2-sentence prompt, select the option I want, and hit go. And I did it twice in 2 different ways to pick the one that I wanted. And I want you to understand that that type of ability cannot be ignored. You can't put it away. It's not, the genie will not go back in the bottle. The bell will not be unrung. There is no way out of this. But there's so much more than just the evolution of technology. Here's kind of the threat assessment, right? The seismic decay of what's going on in our systems right now. Economic and geopolitically, the U.S. dollar value is in an accelerated, unyielding terminal decline. With, at the same time, we have like a political tribalism reaching a fever pitch. And what I mean by that is I'm very clear, the dollar is not dying. That's not what we're talking about today, is the dollar dying, right? What we're actually talking about is we're talking about the dollar reaching a point of accelerated devaluation that is going to continue. So what I'm not saying, and I'm trying to be clear about this, I'm not saying in 5 years from now your dollars will be worthless. You'll be taking a wheelbarrow of them to the store to get one sack of potatoes like Weimar Germany. What I'm saying is there is no stop. In the words of Lynn Alden from the Bitcoin space, there's no stopping this train now. This is a continuous devaluation that will probably continue for several more decades at least, with the dollar being the unit of account that most people use because it's the least smelly shirt in the hamper. That's the only thing holding it together, and that can only do so much. But there isn't a major government out there that has a competing currency that's really any stronger and backed by anything else but the same institutional bullshit. And there is nobody out there that really has the financial wherewithal. Like, you know, BRICS talked about a gold-backed currency or whatever. No one has the ability to throw the switch overnight. We're all stuck in this casino together. And then the political tribalism, the problems caused by this will continue to amp that up and make it worse, because as long as people are miserable and as long as people will not accept blame for the things they did in their own life to cause their own misery, which that's a long time to come for that to be for most people, then you have to have somebody to blame. And the person to blame will be anybody not in your demographic, anybody not in your peer group, anybody not in your tribe. The Gen Z who's just reaching of age now and dreamed of buying a home and is doing the math and thinking, I can't do it, is happy to blame the boomer because the boomer's not in their demographic, as though the boomer had it super easy when they were 28 years old, which I'm going to tell you, no, they did not. You know, no one trying to buy a house in the mid-70s to early 80s had it freaking easy. And any of you that believe otherwise, you're just – whatever version of history you're leaning into, you're wrong. And at minimum, your timeline's off by about 50 to 60 years, because you're talking about things like the life that returning veterans from World War II and young people that came into adulthood – right in that same period when the boomers were just being born, when they were shitting their pants, the people that were already of working age, they're the ones that benefited from a version of this economy that you've made up in your head that never really existed. But it certainly was much closer to what you envision than what is now. But that is a version of the economy that guys that are old like me now, that you call boomer, even though I'm like dead center Gen X, we never lived in that time. We weren't only not kids in that time. We didn't live in that time. That time was over by the time we were born. That is the 1945 to roughly 1965 when we started getting born in this my generation, maybe up to about 1969, 1970, right in there before Nixon closed the gold window. So the oldest Gen Xers were 5 years old when this started. You don't remember shit from when you were five. So that's the geoeconomic and geopolitical situation, but that's only a piece of it, right? That's not the entire thing. We also have this institutional education decay. And I've talked about the enrollment cliff a lot, but the university model as a whole is a dying emotional support system facing an enrollment cliff. A failing model crashed into a highly informed class of high school graduates. So we've already had kind of this shift in things and how they actually work. We have already had this expansion of the education system, which came from unlimited money. So when we went full court press with the whole marketing message of every child should go to college, and government money started flowing like hitting a gusher oil well, like money just thrown to any student that would apply to go to college. Here's a loan. We don't care how stupid your degree is. We don't care if your grades are shitty. Here's a loan. And that was all backed by government. So the lenders got really open-fisted with it because the government would make sure that you paid your bill, and they would pay your bill in the interim while they collected from you. And what this did was overinflate the number of people with degrees, thereby devaluing a degree. Eventually, there was so much money available, the number of potential customers outweighed the number of seats at universities. So the universities expanded knowing they could fill the seats. And this led to more and more degrees that were more friendly toward lower academic standards. So even back in the 1980s, which ain't really that long ago, when I was getting out of high school, you had to compete to get into a four-year college. And I mean any four-year college, a state school, a public institution, a private, it didn't matter. There was a competitive aspect just to get in. Now, I know it's still hard to get into Stanford or UC Berkeley or MIT or something like that today, but pretty much if you have anything approaching decent grades and money, you can get into a four-year university today, including some pretty big name ones. And even if it's not like a super big name one, there's tons of four-year schools, state schools. Pretty much if you can fog a mirror and have a high school diploma at all, you can get in. So they lowered the academic standards, and that meant they had people coming in the door who couldn't do the level of work that the rigorous predefined skill sets required. And so they kept creating easier and easier degree paths to go along with the easier admission paths. And so we ended up with this, like this collision of non-reality striking into reality. So now you've got kids that are getting out of school. They're looking at their older sister's been out of school for 10 years. She's got her septum piercing and she's making lattes at Starbucks and she's crying about being $150,000 in debt. And this young person's graduating today and mom and dad are going, go to college like your sister. They're going, no, I'm not doing that. So you have, and then you have a demographic cliff hitting that people have been having less kids for about 20 years. So voila, this is now the time there's less high school graduates even available to go into the overbuilt system while more and more of them are figuring out this is a bad deal. So that's just upending everything. And so people are looking at blue collar trades. That's researching. People are looking at coding boot camps. People are taking self-directed education paths. People are still going to college. There's just less of them. And more of them are saying, hey, if I'm going to go to college, whatever I do has to matter. It has to result in something into a fully overbuilt system. Then we have health and diet dogma. And I think really this disruption came more than anything else from the absolute campaign of medical misinformation from the establishment during COVID and the slow nature of movement toward things that did seem to work and did seem to help, and the absolute maliciously violent suppression of speech that challenged anything the mainstream was saying, including when doctors stood up and said, I am a doctor. I have worked my entire career in ER and ICU environments. I see these things we're doing and they're having negative results and we're doing them anyway. And no one will explain to me why. Shut him up. Okay. When all of this hit together, and then at the same time, it was the exact same time we had the emergence of things like the ketogenic diet, the carnivore diet, the paleo diet, the primal diet, right? All of these different forms of eating, some of them were radically low carb. All of them were lower carb than the standard diet, but many of them, you're still eating 100 carbohydrates a day. And from the whole spectrum of them, we have YouTube channels with people who have documented their journeys, and you have the doctor say, you're going to die. Your cholesterol is going to go to 10,000. You're going to have a heart attack. That fat is going to make you fat, right? And then you have these people, and you look at them, and there they are when they started, and there they are a year later. And they're 40, 50 pounds lower in weight. They don't have any of the things that in the face that cue in the damage that something like Ozempic does. And so people, even people that aren't going to go all in on one of these specific methods of eating, are still going, wait a minute, you lied. You lousy bastards lied to us again, right? Like that's part of the whole MAHA movement and everything else too. Like, so even if I'm not going to become a carnivore or a ketovore, right, but I'm going to take more of like I'm going to eat sourdough breads that are actually fully fermented, the movement of people learning about true health and nutrition has exploded. But the course, and that's the good side, the corresponding side is there's almost no trust left in the medical industry, the pharmaceutical industry, the food industry, you know, the medical device industry. All of it, the health and nutrition space from the certified experts of the system, I would say more than half of all people right now have not just limited trust, no trust. And I'd say of the other 50%, about 25% are still all in on whatever the system says. They probably always will be. Trust my experts. And then there's that other 25%. So you're talking about a full 75% that has deep questions about the ethics and morality and effectiveness of the mainstream. We've never been in a position like this quite before. And with that mindset, I kind of want to move on to the next part of this, which is the threat versus asset matrix that this all works up. So where we're at now is, if we look historically over how people addressed four key areas of their life, wealth, storage, career path, lifestyle, and health, there's been a dramatic shift. And wealth storage has traditionally been something we relied on fiat currency to do since we've had to in 71, since that became a thing in 1971. No matter how many times you heard people say the dollar isn't backed by gold, it's not what it used to be, it's not real money, people still held their money in dollars. And when it wasn't held in dollars, it was in dollar-denominated assets. Even though they had a stock, their entire viewpoint of it was, how many dollars did I spend on it versus how many dollars do I have now? So if I put $100,000 in investments into various stocks, ETFs, and funds over a number of years, and I had $150,000 now, so I went 100 in, I got 150 that I could take out now, you felt really good about it, just because number go up. But what people are beginning to look at now is, okay, number go up, but what does it buy? And if your number went up, but the purchasing power that you actually have is equal to or close to where you started, had you never risked the money at all, you start to feel trapped. And so we start looking at sovereign adaptations, the flux error. We start looking for other places to put our money. One of those might be Bitcoin, right? But it doesn't have to be. It would be a more strategic look at things like stocks, ETFs, real property, gold, precious metals, silvers, commodities, investing in yourself, building up your homestead. All of those types of things are a reaction to the same problem. Bitcoin is just kind of the dot on a screen, easy one to sweep surplus capital into. But there's a reason that people are now looking more like, hey, you know what? It's maybe not a bad idea to figure out how to work remotely, move outside the city, get a lower cost of property acquisition, fix the property up, and make it in some way able to support us. That was a kind idea. That was like an interesting thing that I talked about back in 2008. Now it's a mainstream metric that people are using to evaluate their lives. Career path. The four-year university degree program was so entrenched when I started this show back in 2008 through 2010, 2012, that whenever I mentioned this, I literally got attacked. I mean, I got emails from people that love my show otherwise. You just don't understand. You have survivor bias because it worked out for you and you didn't go. And on and on and on, these types of emails would come in. Today when I talk about this, what I get is, hey, you're right. Look what's happening. That's how much change there's been over this, 18-year period that I've been doing this show. Blue-collar trades as a direct path to wealth has come back in ways that I don't think anybody would have believed in 2015 if you told them it was coming just, 10, 11 years ago. They wouldn't have bought it. Like, that, you literally will have people saying on national television, you know, a young person that really wants to build their life needs to look into things like metalwork, electrical work, pipe fitting, et cetera. And today, those are trades that are not only still valid, and they've always been valid as great ways to make money and great way to build a career. They are now considered some of the career paths that are least impacted by automation, AI, et cetera. So this has become like a whole new, like, and we realize we don't have enough people to do the work right now. We need more people, not less, in these trades. That doesn't mean everybody should give up going to college and do a trade. What I'm saying is people are taking a much harder look at exactly why am I doing what I am doing before they do it. Gen Z, the younger cohort of Gen Z, and the Gen Alphas coming in behind them, again, they're looking at their brothers and sisters. They're looking at their parents. They're looking at their older cousins. They're looking at the people they know around them. They're paying attention to social media. They're seeing all these people say, I have all the degrees, I have all the certifications, and my life's miserable. And they're saying, maybe just for a second, I need to evaluate a different way. Then we got lifestyle. People mostly have lived in this country in a very system-reliant suburban housing mode. Apartment or house, in town, in city, what have you. And even people that live semi-rural, they didn't quite do the homesteading things anymore. I saw that a lot. Like, where I grew up in Pennsylvania, when I was in high school, I think it was already fading. It wasn't like since I left and then I came back, it was gone. Like, one of the reasons I talk about when I was a kid, I used to take like the garden stuff to all the neighbors when our garden produced more than we could use, wasn't just because the people themselves were getting older, but their kids who had left home, many of the times they hadn't even really left. They still lived in the same county. They might not be on the same street, but you know, you'd see the son or the daughters and the grandkids coming to see these older people maybe once a week or once every other week. But what they weren't bringing was surplus garden produce because even though their parents taught them, they weren't doing it. So this really kind of atrophied. And when I started talking about it in 08, I was like, it's coming back. By 2010, we were really starting to see it. But by 2012, that's when we started to see this deluge of like the homesteader influencers on Instagram and YouTube and every place else doing all the different things and moving into more off-grid or homestead style lifestyles, whether it would be from small properties to medium to large properties. And then with health, again, institutional medical compliance is the legacy dependency. You get sick, you go to the doctor. The doctor says you need a test, you get a test. The doctor says you need surgery, you get surgery. The doctor prescribes a medication, you take the medication. My grandparents, as much more independent minded as they were than a lot of people are today, they obeyed. The doctor had authority. He wore a white coat. He had a stethoscope. He had a pen and a prescription pad. He was really smart. He went to school. He did what he said. Today, people are like, you know, before I take a drug, maybe I should change my diet. Maybe I should start eliminating toxins. Maybe I should make lifestyle adjustments. This is all the shift that has been coming, but now is here and is now like blowing and going on that forward path as people begin to, you know, more and more question exactly how we got where we are. And then it leaves us with this final piece. And that is that there's more opportunity than any time in history right now. See, people get really mad when you say that. But it's usually people that don't listen to the second part of that when I say it. But things are economically harder than ever before. So the rules have inverted. Now you have all these ways. I mean, you think about the fact that, like, if I was 21 years old and I wanted to do what I did when I was 21 years old, in going back 30 plus years now, when I moved to Texas. When I got to Texas, I had to find a job and I had to, like, look in the classifieds of the newspaper. I had a computer. It was a Commodore 128D. Okay. It you couldn't look up and find jobs with that and your little dial up modem and shit like that. And so you had to go the conventional path to even find a job. And I went the conventional and non-conventional. Like I went to bars and I ended up asking, like, is there anything I can do here? That's kind of non-conventional. I went conventional, finding opportunities, applying for jobs. Today, you could land in especially a major market like Dallas, Fort Worth, Louisville is actually where I lived. You could start working the next day with DoorDash, Uber Eats, Lyft, Uber, something. Even if your car is a piece of shit and you don't qualify to drive people, you can deliver food in packages. That's just one example. You can make money dog sitting for people on a site called Rover. You can do random tasks for people on Thumbtack. None of this is going to make you rich. All of this is a base of economic operations that you can begin churning in money instantly with a flexible schedule where you can still look to build your own thing. At the same time, go back to that time again. I couldn't have built a business online back then. I turn up businesses online now because I get a hair up my ass and want to. And so you have all these ways that you can monetize lifestyle, skill sets, knowledge, compile knowledge and skills, and then monetize it. You can do things that any person who can function in society can do, or you can do very advanced things. And yet we have more people now than ever going, I'll never own a house someday. It is a serious juxtaposition. And the only way out of this is to understand the lay of the land and the flux. So what we need to look at is basically four quadrants that people are operating in right now. And where do you want to be? So for those that can see the video, we have at the back action and decisiveness at the top of the matrix. This is kind of like the whole, you know, political spectrum. Where do you land on it, right? At the bottom, we have paralysis. So we have high action up top and low action to no action at the bottom. to the left, we have people that are system reliant. And then on the right, we have people with personal agency. And so this is where everybody gets separated. The top right or top left quadrant, we have the loyalist. And the loyalist can be a very dangerous place for you to be right now. Loyalists are not people who are lazy. You notice they're not in the bottom, the paralysis level of the matrix. They're up in the action. They take action. But they follow the legacy rules. Go to school, get good grades, get into this good company, stay there, progress all the way through it. Eat your, you know, your food pyramid or whatever it is. If the doctor tells you to do something, you do it. These are not bad people. They just believe in a system that's dead and dying. Down at the bottom, below the loyalist, we have the victim. So this is the person that's system reliant, but also doesn't take a lot of action. Sits around and waits for somebody else to fix it. They wait for the broken systems to stabilize. Again, these may not be bad people. They might be abundantly lazy. When I say they are paralyzed or they don't act, I mean they only do what's necessary to get by. And they think back, well, 15 years ago, I only did what was necessary to get by. My life was pretty good. Now it's not. So since what I did worked before, it should work now. So when things pick up, it'll all get better for me. And that's not going anywhere because that person is confused for two reasons. One, 15 years ago isn't coming back. It's going to continue to change and it's going to change at accelerate. But two, you shouldn't be able to do well putting in the effort you were putting in 15 years ago. Now you should be putting in a different level of effort because hopefully you've grown and learned and matured in those 15 years. And if you're young and you're in this quadrant, you're listening to historians. Your aunts and uncles tell you about how it used to be and say, just do what we did. It'll be fine. And no, it won't. Then on the low action, but personal agency side, people that do recognize the problem, but they don't do much about it. Those are cynics. They see reality, but they're parallel. It won't matter. It doesn't matter. Yes, they're lying. Yes, this doesn't work, but it's not going to matter. Robots are going to do all the jobs. What's the point? We're going to get UBI eventually. What's the point? That'll be a scam, but what are you going to do? That's that group of people. And then you have the apex operator. That's who I want people in this audience to become. Again, especially if you're less than 10 years from being done with your work life, right? This is where you take decisive action based on independent reality mapping. So it's extreme personal agency. I own myself, but extreme responsibility, action, and decisiveness that go with it. This is where we want to move you to in this system. And only by doing it can we actually start to put this, what I call a capability stack together. So that means we have to have first a cognitive engine. This is threat detection and reality mapping. This is staying in the parasympathetic state, which means you're in a response mode, not a react mode. The sympathetic mode is, I can't believe this is happening. Fight, flight, or freeze. The response mode is, I accept what's happening. I'm analyzing the threat that I've detected. I've come up with a way to map reality going forward where I can deal with it. And that can be in a split second or it can be long duration over time, depending on the situation. Then you have psychological armor. This is biological and mental stabilization. So this is taking care of your health, being healthy, not being so overweight that you run out of breath going to the mailbox and back. This is thinking about the food that goes in, but it's also your mental stabilization to realize that you actually do have that cognitive engine, that you are in control so that you can stay in response versus react mode. Then you have kinetic action. That's where we actually have to deploy force and movement. So now we have to take what we've learned, what we've derived, what we've planned, and this better physical state and mental state we've put ourselves in, and we have to put things out in the wild. We have to make them happen. We have to move forward with intention and then a sovereignty base. That's our foundation of leverage and independence. So that brings us into these traits, these 10 traits that I wanted to work over with you today. And the first trait is independent thinking. If you're going to survive going forward, you can take my advice, but you can't let me think for you. I basically tell you guys what I do in my life, how it works, what doesn't, what my experience has led me to believe, where I think we're going, and how I plan to navigate to get there. And you should I really believe, and with my track record, should take that very seriously. But you still then take all that information, remain your thought leader in your life, and apply that into your life, adapted to your situation, your goals, your tolerances, etc. Because I can't design your life for you. I have enough to do to design my own. You can't simply do exactly what I do and have it work out, because you're not me and I'm not you. Most of you listening to me are either older than me or younger than me. Only very few of you are the same age. That's just one variable. Some of you are female. I'm a dude. I don't care what the woke crowd says. That matters. We're going to take different paths just on that. So I am a very aggressive personality. I call myself an extroverted introvert. I don't really like to be in big crowds for too long, but I have no problem making my case, standing in front of a room, telling my story. If that's not you, you can become better at it, but it's still not who you are intrinsically. You have to design your life based on your assessment of your needs and your goals and your desires, and that begins with independent thinking. The next is skepticism with discernment. We have to question institutions actively without degrading into cynicism or paralysis. We have to be able to filter noise from signal is what I'm saying here. And what I mean by that is, no, I don't trust Johnson & Johnson, Merck, etc. I don't trust the average doctor to really put thought into what they advise me to do with my health, because I know they are basically professional drug prescribers, right, or drug dealers. The real drug dealers, of course, are the pharmaceutical reps. That doesn't mean I will throw out all things that come from the medical and health space. I have to have some source of data and information, and I'm not going to only get it from some girl named Willow who contemplates her navel every day and tells me to eat horse spelt or whatever the hell it is, right? I still have to be able to gather information from some of the mainstream sources. I just need to be able to run them through a filtration process and a pressure testing process and not just accept them at face value. The next trait is long-term thinking. In other words, this is what I've talked about in the Bitcoin space for years, where I talk about what is your time horizon? What is your time preference? The longer your time preference, the better you're going to navigate a fluctuated period of time. So what I mean by that is we need to be thinking when we're 20 today about the 60-year-old we're going to grow into over 40 years. That's always been the case, but it's more the case. With everything moving faster, mistakes and early on looking the other way, saying I have time to do this, it doesn't work anymore. And if you're 40 and you've done nothing towards your retirement, yeah, this is scary as shit, and you really need to drop, you know, get down to it seriously. And I bet you it's the 40-year-old who has done very little or has done nothing that would tell the 20-year-old emphatically how right I am, even if they're not willing to make the – they might be like, throw their hands up. They end up in the wrong quadrant, right? The cynical skeptic, right? And they end up not taking action because they feel it's too late. It's not. But it's going to be a hell of a lot harder for them than it is for you at 20, even though it might be hard for you to believe. But we need to start thinking in that long time horizon now. You need to realize, as I say often, every trade you make, which means you gave out dollars to get something in, is a trade with future you. The most important trades we always make are the ones with our future self that have the greatest impact. A $300 rock concert weekend will cost you, if you're 20 years old, if that money had gone into just a standard retirement account, it'll cost you something in the neighborhood of $20,000 to $30,000 in the future. And would 60-year-old you on the verge of retirement look back at 20-year-old you and go, come on, man, why'd you do this to us? Because you are me and I am you. That doesn't mean you don't go to that concert. It means you run things through a filter. And it's not about denying yourself the ability to do things like that. It's about denying the concept of having whatever you want, whenever you want, with no thought about the future, so that enough is being laid away for the future so that when you do have that experience, you can truly enjoy it and know you're not robbing from your future self, your future children, and your future grandchildren. This is a totally traditional way of thinking that unfortunately right now is what we would call a new way of thinking. Next up, we have to look at another trait, and that is calm under pressure. being calm under pressure is about maintaining that parasympathetic state that I mentioned earlier. It's about staying biologically grounded while the external structures feel unstable. Okay? So that is being calm under pressure. And that ties in perfectly with my fifth trait, which is resilience. And resilience, this is really critical. It is not merely enduring change, but actively operating and functioning effectively through change. So resilience, we tend to think of as he got knocked down, he got back up again, he got knocked down, he got back up again. At the end of the whole cycle, he's all bloody and bruised, but he's still there. He's still going. He hasn't quit. He's still trying. He's resilient. That person's durable. I don't know how resilient they are, because the resilient person, when they get knocked down, they don't just get back up again. They ask the question, why did I get knocked down? Why did it hurt so bad? What can I do to avoid it happening again without stopping my forward progress? That's real resiliency. And it goes again back to this sympathetic versus parasympathetic state. The sympathetic state is that fight, flight, or freeze. So as the system changes, your reaction is violently changing along with it. You're just adapting as quick as you can on the fly with no forward thought. The parasympathetic state takes rest, takes time to digest what's happened, analyze it. It provides grounding during chaos so that your response is more like the bottom line in the graph if you're watching the video. It is tailored to a little bit more of the macro of time rather than just the instant. Now, when you talk about this in the survival space, people say things like, but what if somebody's pointing a gun at you and trying to kill you? You have to respond in the moment. You can still respond from a parasympathetic state. And the best operators in things like combat, right? Your special forces guys, those guys, this is exactly what they do. They stay in a very calm state even when people are shooting at them. They stay in a very calm state when they're killing people. And they react faster than the person that has the immediate reaction, right? They have that response mode built into them. I'm suggesting you need to build that mindset into some part of your daily life. And that'll move us on to where we're going to talk about traits 6, 7, and 8. And these all sort of merge together into what I call kinetic action. And so that starts out with adaptability. That's the capacity to not just be resilient, but to change direction instantly without hesitation when environmental shifts occur. The ability to look at something and go, instead of, hey, that thing that you're really good at, yeah, a lot of people are going to be good at now because they made a tool to make it automated. And so you're not going to be able to do that anymore and be a rock star in that world because everybody is now super at doing the thing. Yeah. But the adaptable person says, no, wait a minute. If you give everybody the best tools for sculpting, the master sculptor still makes better sculptures. If you give everybody a 3D printer, anybody can make anything somebody else designed, but it's still the master designer that can build the thing to be printed, right? No matter what the tool is that's been upgraded, we upgrade our own performance and adapt to using the new tool, we are still better than average. And better than average puts you at the top of your peer group in that particular thing. That's one way to be adaptable. You also have to look at, like, when you realize, hey, look, there's a movement right now, like I told you guys back at the beginning of the whole COVID years, where people are moving out of the cities and into these kind of outside the beltway suburbs, more rural, and there's a lot of affordable property there right now. The adaptable person moved then if they could. The non-adaptable person said, nah, it'll all get better. It'll all come back. It's only a fad. They didn't adapt, and now they're on the inside looking out and not able to get out there. As I said, that window would close, and for many people, it did, at least for a time. Trait 7 is decisiveness. You can't be adaptable unless you're also decisive. Decisive means you execute actions with incomplete information, refusing to freeze in uncertainty with speed over perfect clarity. But it doesn't mean out of the frying pan into the fryer. Decisiveness uses what you do know to make the best decision you can in the time frame you have available based on what is most likely going to happen or what is most probable of what you do not know based on what you do know. That no person can be decisive and also always require all the information before making a decision. Now, the more time we have to make a decision up to a certain point, the more time we should spend gathering that information. But if you wait until you have all the information, it will be too late to make the decision, or others will have made the decision ahead of you, and you would have lost anything approaching first mover advantage. Go back to Bitcoin for a minute. When Bitcoin rose up and started to be a thing, and when I say rose, I'm not talking about Michael Saylor and, you know, the actual acceptance that one day we'll have $100,000 Bitcoin and we'll have ETFs. I'm talking like 2012, 2013, when Bitcoin was still trading well under $1,000. And it could have died the next day, and everybody was saying it was going to die. There's a point where many of us looked at it and said, no, wait a minute, the fundamentals are there. This is most likely going to change the world forever, and I'm going to make a decision to be part of it. That didn't mean that you mortgaged your house and bought all the Bitcoin, because you could have been wrong. But when you looked at it based on everything that had happened up to that point and things that were coming forward, it was a pretty easy choice that, hey, there's not that much risk here. I'm going to get involved. That was a decisive moment for many. And many people stood on the sidelines like monkeys throwing shit at the people that actually made a decision. And then 6, 7, 8 years later, what were those people called that were decisive? Lucky. They weren't lucky. They were decisive and adaptable. And they were also willing to see the opportunity, because trait 8 is opportunism. You have to be an opportunistic person to get the most out of what's coming. I guess that's always been true. But it's more true with greater flux. We have to view disruption not as a risk to be mitigated, but as direct leverage to be exploited. In other words, when most people see a problem, they see something that interferes with their existence, and they didn't do it, so therefore they expect somebody else should fix it for them. That's entitlement culture, real entitlement culture in a nutshell, because of course, they blur the line with words, and they refer to something like Social Security as entitlements. And both of those things are true, but the word is being used completely different. The Social Security recipient is entitled to receive their benefits because they paid into it for their whole friggin' life. So, yes, they're entitled to it in the true meaning of the word. When we say entitlement attitude, we're talking about things that people think they have coming to them that they didn't earn. And don't think that taking that one term and twisting it around itself and putting in a political messaging is because they don't know what they're doing. They know precisely what they're doing. But the opportunistic person, every problem they see, they go, how can I benefit from this? How can I leverage this into my own future? When AI started to show up about 3 years ago, that's all it's been. Many of you had huge consternation. You were very angry with me. You called it the devil. I had people that left podcasts done in video like this because I pulled up an AI tool and showed how it worked. They got mad. They threw their hands in the air with derision. They made one last announcement about them leaving like it was an airport and we needed to know, and they left, and then they wrote me a hate email, right? I didn't care. Because I took what I knew about technology and technology implementation and workplace adoption, because I worked through it going from like about 1996 through the early 2000s, I saw the internet completely take over corporate America. And when I saw the same pattern, it will happen here. You better be able to use it. They're going to use it against me. Well, then you better know how to use it so you have the same weapon that they do, or you won't recognize it. That was exactly what I told you 3 years ago. That was opportunistic. Today, I'm building my show with momentum that feels a lot like I built it with in the early days, all over again, because I jumped on this and I saw it as an opportunity. I'm writing a book about it, right? I've built a course about it. My life is better because I got involved with it. That's opportunism. In other words, this is a disruption. It's going to interfere with, it's like, it does automated podcasting. It's going to take away some of my ability to tell stories. That was my first reaction to it. And I went, no, it will be the skill atrophier for the weak, and it will be the skill multiplier for the strong. If I'm strong, I need to be part of it. This speed over stall model right here on your screen right now. If you are on the video, this is the most important thing I'm giving you today. The adaptability, decisiveness, and opportunism linked together in your kinetic action to take away all the things you know to be true, all the things that we complain about, all the things we bitch about, and actually put them to use in a way that actually makes things happen. But without a sovereignty base, it all falls apart. It all falls apart. You have to own your own life. You have to feel that you own your own life. One of the big reasons that so many young people, that you're like, why don't they understand the opportunity they have? Because their personal agency has been stripped from them. Because they came up in a hyperized version of what you came up in. If you're a millennial, you know what I'm talking about. If you're a Gen X, you hate what I'm talking about. You saw it happen to your younger siblings. You grew up with, if you're Gen X or you're a boomer, you grew up with extreme personal agency. What is personal agency for an 11-year-old? When you and your friends get on bikes, leave your house on a Saturday morning at 8 o'clock in the morning, and don't come back until 4 o'clock, and no one worried about where you were because they didn't hear from somebody that you were dead, and as long as you were home by the time you said you were going to be home, nobody sent out a search party. That was extreme personal agency. When you guys all went, you know, to a drinking party when you were in your teens, and amongst yourselves figured out, since we're far enough away that we're going to have to drive, one of us has to not drink, and did that as a teenager, that was personal agency. And getting away with it and not getting caught was also a form of personal agency. We had no computers as far as the way we think of them today. We certainly had no personal devices. And we also had teachers that were more along, they were more like guiders rather than straight up requiring us to comply. They gave us freedom. We had extreme personal agency. And so as we got all the tools of the internet, we immediately locked onto it, like boomers and Gen Xers, right? I mean, the oldest boomers might have resisted it more, but most of us, we locked onto this, and your older millennials did too. Oh my God, look what it does. How can I use that? That proactive response from the last slide in the deck is exactly because of this personal agency, assuming total ownership of your outcomes. Like you cannot say, I want complete control, but then want to make an excuse when your results aren't good. You had complete control. They're bad. You own it. You had complete control. They're mediocre. You own it. You had complete control. There were great results. You own that too. You only own the great results if you also own the poor results. And once you see things that way, you have zero reliance on waiting for legacy systems to stabilize or rescue you. Once you get into that mindset, it becomes, I don't care what legacy systems say or do. The ones that still work, I'll use. The ones that don't, I don't give a shit about. And the emerging things that are here that will move me forward, I will grab onto. I don't care that so-and-so doesn't like it. I don't care that I'm getting yelled at because I'm an early adopter. I live my life on my own terms, and that includes all things, not just the things that are easy. And the last thing is skill stacking. One thing we do have to contend with, and I think Gen X is very, this is not just tooting my own generation's horn here. I think it's a direct result of the reality we grew up and came up in. For boomers, for most boomers, even though they were coexisting with us in the workplace, the boomer plan of 20, 30 years for one company and the golden watch in retirement mostly, not always, but mostly worked. Our generation, when I say our generation, people that are 50 right about now, 50 to 55, 56, like under 60 and down to about 45. Our experience in the workplace was we either got hit by this flux, this earlier form of flux, this change in the legacy platform of employment, or even if we narrowly went through it, we saw it happen to people around us. If you ask most people who are 70 today, if you started when you were 30, and you, who were your coworkers from the time you, that had a traditional career, right? Not an odd job hopper or something. From 30 to 50, how much change was there in your contemporary, the people you worked with? That they stayed where you were, they worked with you, and you worked with them 15 to 20 years of your time. There was actually a fairly large number even at that point that would say, well, yeah, there was all the change and everything, but like I worked with Bill, Tom, and Frank, and we all worked together up until all of us retired. That was pretty common. If you are 50, you don't even know what the hell that means. Not only were you jumping around, but if you managed to stay put, you saw lots of people leave, and you saw lots of people leave, and when you followed up with them, they did better than you by leaving. Well, the new world that we live in is that on steroids. And the only way you survive in that is you develop this incredible diverse array of skills, and you stack those skills onto each other so that I know how to do A, B, and C, but I can combine A, B, and C to do D, E, and F. It's function stacking with your knowledge and skill set, your combination of hard and soft skills, right? The person that can weld, but also can run a CNC machine, that can also design things with like programming level, right? That person can do more than any person who can do any one of those three independently and then just take it anywhere else. If you know how to write books, that's great. Maybe you should know how to market them so you can sell books. So now you need writing, marketing, and selling. Because the day of, hey, I'll just go get a publisher and everything will be great, it's pretty much over, because now you have to compete with people who immediately iterate a book, make it better, put it out in the wild, and start marketing it on their own, and they're making more money than they will with a publisher because everything's shifted. That requires a skill stack concept. Without that skill stack concept added to the personal agency and everything else we talked about today, you're kind of just treading water. And you're treading water in a really dangerous situation, because you're treading water in a place where the water level is going to keep rising and it's never going to go down. And so you need to swim to an island and build something. And that is this sovereign operator framework that I brought you today. All of these things put together. This is not 10 disparaging ideas that go in 10 different directions. This is not singular. It's not like you can pick two and do them really well and ignore the other eight and do just fine. This is a framework. It is a system. You have an input that is environmental chaos. That's where it begins. And when I say environmental chaos, I'm not talking about climate change or even necessarily anything environmental. There's a lot of problems in the world we can point to. Mercury in our oceans, right? Sulfur in our streams that causes oxidation, lowers oxygen levels and kills fish. That's generally tied to like coal mining operations. That's still happening, though there's less of it. More of it has been cleaned up. Those are environmental chaos, the type of thing you would usually think about. Garbage, debris, et cetera. When I say environmental chaos here, I'm talking about all the things we talked about today. I'm talking about the erosion of trust in the institutional systems. I'm talking about awakening to the fact that the way we eat is actually toxic and poisoning and killing us, right? That's what I mean by environmental chaos. I'm talking about the fact that skills that were considered lifelong skills are now being replaced with automation and AI. That is environmental chaos. That has to go into the filter of skepticism and independent thinking, right? And that then gets stabilized by calm and resilience, which then goes over to an engine that is agency and skill stacking. And that results in an output that is based on your adaptability, decisiveness, and opportunism. And that all has to target your long-term goal. Where are you actually going? Where are you trying to get to? What does winning look like in your life? If you can't answer that, then you have bigger problems than just developing these 10 traits will do for you, and understanding the environmental chaos and threats will do for you. You have a much larger problem if that's the case. Because I think it was Seneca that said, if you do not know which port you sail to, no wind is favorable. So if I am, let's say, in the middle of the Pacific, and I want to head toward California, and I know I want to go to San Francisco or what have you, or you know, a port near LA or something like that. And I know where I'm going, and I've got a wind that is heavily from the west to the east. That's an incredibly favorable wind, because I know where I'm going, and the wind is literally, I don't even have to cut into the wind much. I can just head that way, right? And I'm in good shape. But if I'm in the middle of the Pacific, I got the same wind, but I don't know where I'm going. And if I don't want to go to the West Coast of the United States, I'm in a worse position by having what was just previously a favorable wind. It's actually moving me faster in the direction that I don't want to go. So I have to have what I call a North Star goal. What do I want my life to look like in the end? What am I working for? What is my next big achievement, right? So a long-term goal could be 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, and a person has 40 years left of their life. So that long-term goal might not yet be retirement. That's part of the plan, but the long-term goal might be something to become like a senior. Maybe you want to take a traditional career route. You still want to in spite of all this, and there's places for it. And you want to be some sort of like a senior VP of operations or something like that. By the time you're 40, you still have 15, 20 years of maybe more work left in you. So that would be your long-term goal at that point. By the time you reach it, you need to be readjusting to a longer-term goal. My long-term goal now is to make sure that when I retire, I have the freedom that I had at 14 and the resources I had by 40. By 40, I was doing really well in the world. I was already doing this show, right? And I have a tremendous amount of freedom compared to the average person, but I do not have the freedom that I had at 14. Now, I might choose to exercise that. I hope I will choose to exercise that freedom a bit differently. But if I want to fall asleep in the shade underneath a tree with a couple fishing poles thrown into a pond, I want, if that day I choose that, to not have to get up and go back to work. I want to be able to do it when I want to be able to do it. Not just most of the time like now, but all the time. So even I, at this point, am still setting that long-term goal into the realm of challenge. If the goal didn't scare me a little bit, I need it to be bigger. I need to know where I'm going. Because, guys, we're back to a commonality that I've talked about many times today and in other subjects. The change is not slowing down. It's accelerating. You do not have a choice as to if you navigate this flux. Your only choice is how. You don't have another choice. There is no plan B. There is no other option. This is going to run smack into you. And again, the longer your runway you have before you're done, before you're into a true retirement mode where you don't really give a shit anymore, the longer that is, the more you'll have to navigate and the harder that it's going to be and the more important that it will be. With the caveat of, if at the end of this 10 years that we have ahead of us, which is 9 now, by the way, like, almost down to 9.5, like in June that will happen, right? Because I am locked on this 25 to 35 period. If in 2035 you have another 10 years, you're going to be 55 and your plan is to work till 65, man, if you do not adapt to this, you're an old man in or an old woman in the machine still that is being, at that point, fully dominated by people that grew up and came up with all the things that are causing the flux now. Because the most of the things, even AI to a degree, has been around since 2010. When you guys first met me, I guess, if you're an old school listener, back in 2008 when I started the show, and I was working as a C-level officer in a holding company and a president in one company within that group of held by the holding company. One of the other companies that we were managing was a company that was using AI in 2008 with predictive algorithms to help carriers like AT&T, T-Mobile, Sprint, etc., know where and when to deploy capital to upgrade and manage their networks. So if you think AI is brand new, we were using self-learning algorithms, which is what AI really is back then. Now, it required a higher operator level to be able to use it, but it's what we were doing even back then. So there's going to be a ton of people that when you're, if you're, like I said, right now, let's say you're 45, 10 years from now, you're going to be 55. You've got some runway left before you're done. And you're looking at 35-year-olds who are 25 now. The competition those people are going to have nipping at your heels to try to get ahead is going to be extreme. And those are going to be people who natively came up with this, which will be their advantage. Your advantage if you choose to make the most of it starting now, will be that you live through so much more. You live through people had flip phones instead of smartphones, and you saw that evolution happen. You might have lived through when orders still came in on fax machines, even though email would have worked. You lived through seeing people move to working in groups on things like Slack, but you saw the world before that happened. By having greater context and greater experience, you should actually be the dominant force in your last, 10 years of your career. If you're at a point now where after this period, by 2035, you're going to have that 10 years, 15 years, 8 years, somewhere in that range left, you should be the dominant life form in that ecosystem. You should be the kind of person that if you do stay in the machine to a degree, when you finally announce, you drop that packet and say, I'm on the way out. They're like, no, what can we do? And you still say, screw off. They should still be asking you not to go. Because that's the opportunity that's out in front of you as a runway right now, if you'll take it. The choices are you going to, right? Are you going to take the opportunity? Are you going to decide that you are going to be in control of this next 10 years? Or are you just going to wait to see what happens? Are you going to think this redneck duck farmer, he doesn't know anything. He's a redneck hippie duck farmer. He's a podcaster. He ain't had a real job. And well, what is it? Almost 20 years now. What the hell does he know? Well, how did I get there? I got there by the type of lifestyle design that I teach every day. That's how I got there. And I would really like you guys to think deeply about this as you go through this week. This is the beginning of a brand new week. Hopefully this is kind of a pep talk, a little bit scary, but a hell of a lot more inspiring to get you up off the ground and making things happen in your life. And I'm going to tell you something else I'm going to do. You know that deck that I ran? I am going to put a link in the show notes so you can download it as a PDF. And that way you can kind of check it out and learn a little bit more about this technology. Because as I said, everything you got today from me was mine. It was for me. The visuals and the arrangement of the presentation came from a tool called Notebook LM. A tool that's free to use, but you may not be able to make PowerPoints with it unless you have the paid version of Gemini. So that's just a little kind of, additional alert there. And just so you know that, if you go try to do it yourself, but I want you to see what it'll do. It's pretty impressive. Here's a story of this working in the real world very recently, just a week and a half ago when I was at Nicole's. It's a gentleman I've met a couple times now. His name's Gordon. He runs a company that sells a lot of things to the federal government and to suppliers to the federal government in the optics world. I'll leave it at that. And to operate at the level, and he's pretty much a solopreneur. I think he has some helpers, but they're kind of standoff, out task type things. He's basically a solopreneur. He's doing 7 figures of revenue this year already. Okay. This guy's successful. He is right out of our community building this kind of a business. To do business there, though, there's certain things you have to have. And one is what's called ISO compliance, so like ISO, 9001 or whatever it is. I don't even know what his ISO thing he needed was, but he had his ISO manual. And this is so when you're approaching a new vendor or a new department in government, you're saying we can supply. They basically say we want to see this international standards compliance that your company put together so that we know you really do things the way you say, because you're certified, but you also have compliance. So ISO is about doing what you say, saying what you do, and updating it at all times so it's always relevant to the way you process things now. It's not really the third-party standard people think it is. It's more an internal standard that also complies with an external standard and has a process to ensure that stays put. So he takes his ISO manual. I show him how to use Notebook LM to make PowerPoint decks like I made for a podcast presentation today. We do the more detailed version with a little bit of prompting, and it produces this amazingly beautiful deck that completely outlines the process flow of his ISO compliance straight out of his ISO manual. And he looks at this, he goes, this is actually beautiful. And there was maybe a slide or two that were a little wonky that he might take out, maybe rerun it and replace that with one from a different deck or something. But he's like, when I send my compliance data now and I include this, the person that looks at it is not going to read the whole thing. They're going to scan through it. They're going to get a visual understanding of it. They're going to see the extra step we took, and it's going to ease the friction of onboarding into a new customer relationship immediately. Okay. if you're trying to build a business today, are you going to ignore something like that? Or are you going to understand it? Because the person you're competing with is using it. They're a Gordon. Are you going to be a Gordon? Or are you going to be an Eeyore? Are you going to be, you know, this like trudging along, barely accepting it, being drugged into the new world type person? Or are you going to embrace it and say, what can I do with it? What can it do for me? How can I be more by using these tools? That is where you have to be to survive all the shit we talked about today, not just the automation and AI revolution, but things like controlling your diet, not blindly trusting authority anymore, managing your finances, all of it. With that, let's go ahead. I think we had a few questions and at least a super chat or two. Trappers 895 threw me a $4.99 super chat and said, may the fourth be with you. Looking forward to the AI course next week. So I imagine you got in. I just checked. There's like two seats left. You can still get in. I'm going to drop that link again. And, you know, the fact that it didn't sell out instantly lets the last couple people slide in from the side if you want to take that on and be part of that journey. And I'm glad to have you in it with us there. Thanks for the $4.99 super chat. I promise you it will be worth the time you put into it, and your effort that comes out will be directly proportional to your effort in. Scott King says, dollar decline is the plan, always has been. They're going to accelerate it to make sure the debt is less problematic. So that's a declaration, but it's actually way more astute than just him prognosticating it. The reason that Scott's right about the fact that devaluing the dollar was always the plan is because that's entirely how the system was set up. Even before we fully left the gold standard, they were already doing fractional reserve even before Roosevelt. In fact, the famous twisted quote by Henry Ford about the people would rise up if they understood how the fractional reserve system works, it's actually a much longer, more eloquent quote. It comes from his book called My Life and Work, and it was written in the 1920s, before the beginning of the Great Depression. And it was more along the lines, if the people were to understand what the elite can do with money, it is a true question as to how they would respond. And the tone is that people, politicians and bankers, might very well hang from lampposts by their feet if the people truly understood it. But again, that was 1920s that one of the greatest business minds in American history was already saying that. So the plan has been to do that forever. It just accelerated in 71 with the last ties to gold, where there was some tie to it. But now the problem is such, the only solution is to further devalue the money. Debt, the people that are in debt are favored by inflation, and the people that hold money are burned by inflation. And most people are somewhere in the middle. They have very little money to hold. All they're having is their earnings power eroded over time so quickly that they have a hard time stacking any excess capital. So Scott's right, because it's the only button they have is print. The only question they take with printing now, how long do we hold the button down? How much do we print at any given time? And what interest rate do we put on the money when we loan it out to people? Because loaning it is how we create it. There is no third option. There is no other option. Printer will go burr because it is the only move you have. And when you have a country that is in debt for so much money, there's not enough money in the world to pay the debt of one country. Devaluing the debt is the only move you have left. The only other move is an eventual rebasement of the monetary system, something that I predicted a long time ago and eventually gave up on and said, no, they're not gonna. And now they've gone too far. Now the monetary system will only be rebased when it is demanded that it be rebased. And it will be demanded by a mix of people and what they choose to accept as money, and the flat reality running into it at some point and realizing this can't go on forever. And I don't know how long that is. So we have to plan for both success and failure of the economic system that we currently have. But we know that it will remain in a continual long-term failure forever. until it finally hits the true failure point. And then gun-related Vid says, comment, yeah, left uni for trades, doing really well after 15 years. So there's a guy that left the university system and went off and learned a trade. He doesn't say what trade, but it could be anything from being a pipe fitter to a journeyman iron worker to an electrician. There's a ton of trades beyond what we usually think of. There's a ton of things that are trades that people don't even really think about. And so I think we're going to see more people like that doing more things like that in the future. Anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed today's show. Again, that PowerPoint deck that I used in the presentation today, those of you listening by audio, which is like 100 times the number that listen by video, you can go pick this video up today. But you can also just run by thesurvivalpodcast.com, look up episode 3839. You can download it's in PDF to make sure that everybody can get it. If anybody really wants it in PowerPoint for some reason, let me know. I'll send it to you. Just email me, jack@thesurvivalpodcast.com, TSPC in the subject line, and that'll be that. I want to give you some updates here toward the end, though, on my books. Before that, though, I want to talk to you about the item of the day today, and that is these Energizer Power Failure Lights. I brought you these guys about a month ago, and they went on sale today, so I brought them back around. These are basically flashlights / nightlights. You plug them into a wall, and they sit in there, and if the power to that outlet goes out, depending on how you have them set, they'll come on so you can see it's no longer dark. Put some in the hallways, maybe the bathroom, the places you would need to navigate to, you know, your flashlight, your lanterns, set up your generator, whatever else. This is a immediate response situation. So when I talk about these, people seem to think, well, I don't really need this because I have these other things. And so in my write-up, what I have is picture this. You're in the shower, shampooing your eyes. One kid is bawling in their room. Another is yelling from downstairs that the TV just died, and the house has gone in full blackout mode. That's not a moment you want to start hunting for a flashlight, but if you got a few of these plugged in around the house, at least you can see, and your kids can too, and you can rectify that immediate situation. Because this is something that I've learned, and I bet many of you guys have learned about problems as well and things going wrong. Things never go wrong at the best time for them to go wrong. You ever notice that? Like, in fact, when I have two bad things happen, I'm like, it's going to be a three. Where's the third one? Right? That's my parent. Instead of getting upset about the second one, I start looking for the third one to drop and be prepared for it and emotionally stabilize. So when it does, I don't lose my shit. Right? That is that state. And when you have something like power going out, it usually goes out at the worst possible time. You're playing with your kids and you're running down the hallway and the lights go out and you trip over something and smash your face on the ground. Like that's the, or you're in the shower and the kids are screaming because they're scared because now it's dark. And the older kid is screaming because his video game doesn't work because it hasn't registered in his 14-year-old brain yet that's because the power's out and dad can't fix it for you. And dad's got soap in his crotch and can't see and his eyes and his hair and mom's not home. That's when shit goes wrong with the power. So that one little bit of at least you can see and move through the home and get to your other preps, that is so valuable. And they're on sale for 18% off today, which means a 3-pack of them is well under $30. So I recommend that. And I recommend that if you're going to want to help my show and the work that I do, you do your online shopping starting at tspaz.com. Always, no matter what you buy, you'll help us out if you just start there. There's lots of options there, lots of information there as well, including product reviews, but just ways to get discounts with codes and things like that as well at various places you can buy things. All right, so where I want to end with this, though, today is a little update on my books. So Laws of Life 2, Now Design the System for Your Life, is currently with the formatter. It has been edited by Laura, my editor. It has come back to me for one final pass and has gone off to be edited. It should be back in my hands, edited with cover jacket and everything in 24 hours, according to Matt at thelibertarianbookdesigner.com. Laura should have my second edition of Laws of Life 1 done for me this week. I'll do one more pass through myself. That'll go over to Matt for formatting. That should come back in a week, meaning I can have them both uploaded and ready to go. My release plan is as follows. I will release the second edition of Laws of Life Book 1 first, because it just makes more sense because of all the other things I have to do with it, which means I probably should have sent it to the formatter before Laws of Life 2, but I wanted that one done because it's my new baby. And then I will release Laws of Life Book 2 probably 2 or 3 weeks after it. There will be a true set. I am very proud of where they have come, and I'm going to tell you this. If you have not yet picked up my book, don't. Wait for the second edition. I think, based on what I read, if you bought the Kindle edition, you should be able to like either just resync it or just like basically delete it off your device and bring it back to your device, and you should get the update. The Audible version, I don't know if that will auto-update, but the new Audible version will be off the second edition. All of that will be available within the next month and a half. It's all done. I'm working on the next book, which is Me, Myself, and AI. I think that book is going to impact lives harder than anything else I've done up to this point. As that book begins to get shaped out and defined and the vision comes from it, it's gotten to be where I do my morning routine that I talked about last week. And when I wake up, I am excited to write, even when it's hard, because sometimes it is hard to write. I'm very excited about it. I keep finding new things to work into it, and I keep framing it out better and better. And as I read the chapters I've already written, I sit back and go, man, I really did. Like, wow, I wrote that? Like, I don't know that I've ever really felt that way before about something I've written, where I write it, I know it's good, but then, you know, take a couple days off and go proofread it and go, wow, I wrote that? Like, that's how I feel about some of this. So I wanted you guys to know that's coming. I expect Me, Myself, and AI to be out before the fall workshop, definitely, probably sometime in the neighborhood of September, October. And as soon as that is in the hands of editing and formatting, I'm going to immediately begin pressing forward with a book called North Star. And that was really going to be, even though they might not completely cohesively feel like it, a 4-book set that I think would really benefit anybody. But again, the younger generation that has been so misled and so deceived and feels so helpless, this core set, I hope, will be a gift to those folks. And I hope that many of y'all will pick up copies of the books, not just for yourself, but for the young people in your life. And again, Laws of Life 1 and 2, when those are the second edition of the first one and the new release of the second book come out, I think those of you that even, you know, through the technical errors that ended up in the first book, I got a lot of great feedback about it. Tremendous amount of great feedback. I think the step up is going to be such that it'll almost feel like somebody else wrote the second edition, because what came out of me in the second book caused me to go back and make the updates. There's more than 25,000 new words, and I'm kicking around some ideas with some like low cost courses to go along with these books for those that want that extra level. But I'm also developing some things that I'm using AI to develop that I may make part of the pre-release of the books that I think will be really cool. So keep an eye out for that. And with that, I'll see you off. And tomorrow, Just Jack, no! First Tuesday of the month. So that means John Willis and Nicole Sauce and me will all be together for a 3-head action-packed show of awesomeness. Tune in for that. It will be early in the morning, 9:30 a.m. Take care, guys. I'll catch you then.
Said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.